Hare Krishna. So, continuing our reading of Sivriya Bhagavatamrita, part 1, chapter 7, we're beginning reading from text number 5. Lord Brahma has heard the tremendous emotional outbursts from the Dwarkavasis and Krishna. And so powerful was this vibration that even Lord Brahma could not understand it, what it was. And even his advisors, who basically are the Vedas personified in his court, they also did not have the answer to what this sound was. Of course, this means that the expression of love between Krishna and the Brajvasis and Dwarkavasis are beyond the Vedas. The science of pure devotional service as given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which culminates in the understanding and the promotion and the actual entering into of Krishna Leela on the level of Dwarka and Mathura and Vrindavan, ultimately Vrindavan, is so enriched and so deep and so subtle and so elevated that even the Vedas, they cannot touch. So Brahma and the personified Vedas, they could not figure it out. And Brahma decided that the only way that he was going to, because he's, you know, in charge of the universe, and when you're in charge of something, it, ultimately it's your responsibility what happens. So he decided that he had to go for himself. So he came, and the scene was so emotional and so touching that he himself became overwhelmed and began to cry. When you're in that emotional state, you, generally you can't think of what to do. You will become overwhelmed with emotion. So Brahma was overwhelmed. But then, because of his position, because of his service to Krishna, Lord Brahma is a qualitative incarnation of Krishna, generally a jiva soul who has become very, very qualified to take up responsibility so great, head of a universe, that practically, you know, only someone directly empowered by Krishna, who has Krishna's potency, can do such a service. So due to that devotional service and the relationship he has with Krishna in that service, he controlled himself. And that's where we're going to start. Text number 5. Sanstabhya it nat atmanam swasvyam swastyam janajitum prabhu upayam chintayan asa prapa janataram hridi. With difficulty, Brahma brought himself under control and started thinking of how to restore his Lord to normal. Soon, an idea came into his heart. So this is a very important point, actually, that confidential devotional service, even if that service is to a superior. See, normally, when you have a relationship with a superior, it's full of protocol, and, you know, you don't step over the boundaries, you don't speak out, you wait for the order, like that. That is a certain level of devotional service from an inferior to a superior. But Lord Brahma is not an ordinary disciple. So he began to think of how to restore Krishna to normal. This is very confidential, you know, because here the person who's your superior, the person who's your Lord, is in an emotional state. So for you to intrude in that emotional state and start to think of what to do, it requires intimacy, it requires confidentiality of a very high order. And you know, we know that Lord Brahma, actually after he got the inspiration from hearing the word tapa, the very beginning of the universe, he didn't know what to do. He was alone in the universe, and he had the ingredients, he had the blueprint, he had everything, but he couldn't execute it, couldn't do it, because you need Krishna's, an inspiration from Krishna within, in order to do that, to do devotional service. So he heard that sound, tapa, tapa, you know, when he was looking for the source of his existence. And then he came back up from the lotus, climbed the lotus back from the Garbhodak ocean, and sat in meditation for 100 years. A long time for him, a long time. And at the end of that, he achieved perfection, and he actually saw Garbhodak Gosai Vishnu, he saw Shirdak Gosai Vishnu, and ultimately he saw Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. That is the subject matter of Brahma Samhita. How Goloka Vrindavan was manifested to Lord Brahma at that time. And Krishna came before him and actually shook his hand. It's symbolic. When you're feeling friendly and you know confidential with someone or like that, you can touch their body. You shake their hand. If there's too much awe and reverence in the friendly, even if it's a friendship, if there's too much awe and reverence, you don't like embrace, or that you stand back, right, and just take the blessings from a distance. But the more confidential the relationship is, the more close the relationship is, then there will be touching and embrace or hand touching. So Krishna came and actually shook Brahma's hand directly. So this is an indication of Brahma's relationship with Krishna. It was actually quite confidential, considering the fact that he's doing such an exalted managerial post. So it's not that just because you're a manager you can't have the confidential relationship with Krishna. Both are possible. But it requires the development of relationship, spiritual relationship. So Brahma, he is in this position. He's seeing Krishna, overwhelmed, but he brings himself under control. Before everyone else, he brings himself under control because he's very intelligent. Lord Brahma is extremely intelligent. In fact, you know, it's his intelligence, motive, passion. If you remember the description of the creation of the universe, the intelligence is created as a transformation of the false ego in the motive, passion. And the mind is created from a transformation of the mode, false, of the mode of false ego. So Brahma is, you know, passion personified, practically. He's, you know, in charge of the creation, you know, of the universe. So, so he brought himself into control, and then he began to get ideas how to solve the thing. Even though the subject matter was his superior, Lord Krishna, he began to think of how to solve the situation, how to help the Lord to come to his normal state. This is confidential devotional service. This is confidential devotional service. What to do to satisfy the mind and the senses of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. Devotional service actually comes down to this. At the end of the day, the most elevated devotional service comes down to how to satisfy, please, the mind and the senses of Krishna, Krishna's ever-liberated associates, you know, and down the line. This is what service means. Service is not a mechanical operation that if something is done this way or that way, then it's okay. It's not mechanical. It's not a formula. Devotional service means that we're doing the service in order to please the senses and the mind of someone, ultimately of Krishna. Depending on who our relationship is with, depending on our rasa and all those things, depending on the service that is being rendered, it boils down to pleasing the mind and senses of someone else. It's important. Very important point. Text 6. Techaiva bhagavat parshve rudantam vinathasutam ucchai sambhodhi yatnena sahodhi kritya sovada. Crying at the Lord's side was Garuda, the son of Vinatha. Garuda's attention was hard to get, but after calling to him loudly for some time, Brahma succeeded. Brahma then spoke. Sri Brahmavacha, Yach Sri Vrindavanam Madhye Raibatadri Samudrayo Srimananda Yashodhadi Pratimalan Gritantakantaram Goyutais Tadvishar Yuktam Rachitam Vishrakarmana Rajyate Matunam Sakshat Vrindavanam Ibhagatam. Sri Brahma said, there is another Sri Vrindavan here between Raivati Hill and the sea. And Nanda, Yashoda, and others are present within it in replica images with similar herds of cows. That Vrindavan, constructed by Vishwakarma, appears just like the Vrindavan of Mathura. Come here to Dwarka. So one may wonder, you know, how did this come to be? That there is a separate, different. This is called Nava Vrindavan, New Vrindavan. See, the idea is that when Krishna goes away from Vrindavan, when his expansion goes away from Vrindavan, because we know that Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, in his original form, never goes out of Vrindavan. He stays in Vrindavan eternally. But he does appear in his prakat lila, in his manifest lila, when he comes to the, when he physically comes to the universe and appears before the souls of the universe. Then he appears to go out of Vrindavan and go to Dwarka. This is his expansion. But he's still Krishna. Not that he's a different Krishna. Sometimes philosophers who make mistakes, the speculators, they say it's a different Krishna in Vrindavan. Because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, therefore it must be a different person that's in Mathura. And it must be a different person that's in Dwarka. Can't be the same Krishna, because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. These people are confused by impersonal philosophy. And they can't understand how Krishna can remain his complete self and go somewhere else at the same time and manifest a part of himself. This is called a plenary expansion. The Mayavadis cannot understand this. How Krishna can be complete and at the same time go somewhere else and remain complete in that same place. They cannot understand that. Om Purna Adan Purnamidam Purnan Purnam Dachyate Purnasya Purnamidam Shishyate. Krishna is complete and he's always complete. It's not that, like when we go somewhere, if I go from here to my room, I'm no longer here. Or if I give you something, you know, I no longer have it. Or if I take a paper, you know, and I tear it up into tiny pieces and throw it to the wind, the paper no longer exists. So the Mayavadis, they think that Krishna is like that. They think that, you know, when he says, you know, Bahusham, when he goes everywhere, you know, when he expands himself, and the one decided to become many, Bahusham. The Mayavadis interpret that to mean that he expands himself into the material world and he no longer exists. But this is not the fact. Not the fact. Krishna is absolutely complete. He can be in many places at the same time and be the same original personality of God and full of his potencies. So when Krishna goes to Mathura, Mathura and Dwarka, he remembers Vrindavan always. And in spite of the fact that, you know, he has a mission to fulfill and he's delivering, you know, the conditioned souls, Pritanaya, Sadunam, Vinashaya, Chidushkitam, all these things that he describes himself, his mission on the earth, why he comes. When there's too much irreligion, he comes personally to rectify the situation and to give inspiration and to his devotees and to attract them, you know, to come back to him finally. Because devotional service is progressive and ultimately we want to go and to serve Krishna directly face to face in the spiritual world. So he's always remembering. When he goes to Dwarka, he's always remembering the Vrajvasis. He's always remembering his Nanda, Yashoda, cowherd boys, the gopis, the cows, all the residents of Vrindavan, the forest creatures. He's always remembering, and he gets into anxiety. You know, like when you're out somewhere and you're home, you feel homesick. You know, it's a natural tendency to want to be where your home is. That's what we're all striving for, all the conditioned souls. We all want to go back home. We will, you know, we're travelers on this journey, life after life after life, and we're hankering to go back home. So Krishna, we have that tendency because Krishna has that tendency. We can't have a tendency unless Krishna has it. Krishna is complete. He's the complete person. So whatever tendencies that we have, Krishna must have. So he has this tendency to feel homesick. And this is the study of Vipralabha Bhava, which is going to be the subject of this chapter. You know, what it means, how Krishna feels separation from Vrindavan, and especially from the gopis and from Srimati Radharani and his other kin. So in order to help him, the residents of Dwarka, they are not envious. You know? When Krishna you know, calls out in his sleep, you know, to Radharani when he's there with Satyabhama or Rukmini, they don't become envious and angry. They become curious. They want to be Radharani. They want to please Radharani. It doesn't always come out like that, but that's the ultimate. The end comes out like this. And so anyway, out of concern for Krishna's well-being, they commissioned Vishwakarma. You know, the Dwarkavasis, leaders of Dwarka, they commissioned Vishwakarma to build a replica Vrindavan just outside of there's a gateway that leads from Krishna's palace. There's a gateway that leads from Krishna's palace, and you go through that gateway, and you go a little distance, and then you come into New Vrindavan. So that means Krishna could go to Vrindavan whenever he wanted to. And it was such a wonderful place that everything appeared just like Vrindavan. And of course, he couldn't duplicate the Vrajvasis. Nobody can duplicate the Vrajvasis. But he fashioned like deities, murtis, like, you know, dioramas kind of Yashoda and Nanda and Radharani and the gopis and the cows and boys and the cows. They were all there, you know, in different places, in the right places, you know. So, anyway, so the idea was that Krishna would be able to go there. But what happened was, when Krishna went there, he felt worse. His feelings of separation from Vrindavan, they got worse. So then, Krishna stopped going there. So there's this new Vrindavan. And Brahma is talking in a way that, you know, there is another Sri Vrindavan. In other words, it's like announcing it. Like they currently constructed it. Why is he announcing it? They're announcing it because, you know, nobody goes there. Krishna stopped going there. You know, when Krishna stops going someplace, then his devotees, they stop going to that place. That is the relationship. Text 9. Tatrimam sargajam yatnat yathabastam sanayanayam kevalam yatitatraisha Rohinyanyo Nikashchana. So carefully take Krishna and his brother in their present state and gently carry them there. But only Rohini should go with them, no one else. Commentary. Brahma wants Garuda to carry Krishna and Balaram carefully to Navabrindavan. The two brothers should not find out that they are still in Dwarkadham. And their devotees should not be allowed to spoil the illusion by following them. Rohini can come along because she knows how to conduct herself intelligently, and especially because she used to live in Rajbhumi and will therefore seem in place. The replica Vrindavan was constructed by Vishwakarma, the architect of the demigods. But to duplicate the Vrindavasis was beyond his skill. He couldn't make copies of unique devotees like Nanda, Yashoda, and the other senior cowherd people, Sri Radhika and the other young gopis, or Sri Dhamma and Krishna's other gopa friends. But he was able to fashion static images of the Vrindavasis, lifelike enough to fool even Krishna. In the overall impression created, Navabrindavan was practically indistinguishable from the original, down to the small details of plant and animal life. So there's many points being made here in this commentary, many points. Krishna and Balaram are not in their normal state of consciousness. They're emotional. They're lying on the ground, unconscious. Tears are flowing out of their eyes. They're calling out in lamentation. They're feeling deep separation from Vrindavan, from the Vrindavasis, from the childhood friends, family members. So, the idea is, this is I'll give you a gross example. Please don't, this is a gross example, but it will give you some idea. When a person gets amnesia, right? Amnesia means you get a blow on the head, accident, or some very traumatic experience, and you forget who you are. This is called amnesia. So if a psychologist or psychiatrist is expert and he finds a person who has amnesia, and if he knows where the person belongs, if he knows the family, then the treatment is to put the person back in the family. If you put the person back in the family, he may feel awkward or, uncomfortable because he doesn't remember, who his wife is, his parents are, his family members are, his children. He doesn't remember them because he has this psychological disease or physical disease. But if you put the person there, because the memory is there in the mind, so you put the person in their original place, gradually, by being in that place, the memory comes out naturally. I mean, this is the process of Krishna consciousness, actually, if you think about it. We organize our lives, the temple, the program of being, with Krishna and remembering Krishna and organizing our decorating things, and our whole existence is done in a way to remind us of Krishna so that we can remember our original position in Krishna consciousness. But now Krishna is in this abnormal state, and Brahma has got this brilliant idea that we should put Krishna into an atmosphere where he can remember Braj nicely so that his anxiety will come down. When you're treating something, when the doctor treats a disease, if they have fever, if there's high fever, the first thing they do have to do is bring down the fever. Jai Shri Krishna Balaram, Jai Ho. You can't give the medicine, the diet, you know, all the different prescriptions that the doctor will give to treat someone won't work if the person can't digest it. So therefore, if you have too high fever, you can't digest anything. So the first thing to do is to bring down the fever. So this is Brahma's, you know, psychology. This is his strategy. Let's take Krishna and Balaram to, you know, New Vrindavan, and let him awake up and see that he's in Vrindavan, and then he will become, you know, peaceful, and then we will start to think differently, and then we can talk about what the situation is. Right? This is the idea. But it's very important that this you know doesn't become disturbed. You know, so he doesn't want all of the Dwarkavasis to go there, because if all the Dwarkavasis are there, then Krishna's not going to be able to identify and relate to the fact that he's in Vrindavan. Right? So Brahma says, no one else should go except for Rohini. Jai Shri Shri Gaurithai, Shri Jai Ho. He says, no one else should go except for Rohini. Why? Because Rohini lived there. She lived there. Krishna won't think that she's out of place because she was there. Right? And not only that, but she's very mature. Balaram's mother. Very mature and very intelligent. So she'll know what to say and what to do. She won't seem out of place, and she'll know, because, you know, the figures that are Yashoda and Nanda, they're images. They're not going to be able to interact with Krishna. So somebody was needed there to, you know, manage the relationship so that Krishna wouldn't, you know, become suspicious. Of course, Krishna's in a state that it's easier to do that, because when you're in an abnormal state, then you don't pay attention to so much details. When you're in an emotional state, you know, you can't see the details as much. Okay, so Brahma is talking to Garuda, and he's telling Garuda what to do to carry out this plan. Shri Prikshidu Bhacha Pratyatnan Swastanam Nito Brahmana Sakageshwara Visharada Vanaprishte Mandam Mandam Yadhatatao. Sri Prikshit said, thus Brahma, with some effort, brought Garuda back to his senses. And that most expert servant Garuda very slowly placed the two lords on his back. Commentary. Garuda was dexterous enough to move Krishna and Balaram without waking them, and clever enough to understand that this scheme would break the trance of Krishna's bewilderment. So Krishna, just like we become bewildered, sometimes Krishna becomes bewildered, but he becomes bewildered for different reasons. We become bewildered because, you know, we're not getting our way, right? Our senses want something, and we're not getting it, so we become upset, we become bewildered, or somebody comes to us and says something that we don't like to hear, and then our emotion comes up, and then we become bewildered. And in that state, you can say and you can do things that are out of character. Out of character. And then the other person, you know, misunderstands how you feel about them or whatever. And this is the way illusion is perpetuated. But Krishna, he doesn't become bewildered for the same reasons. He becomes bewildered only because he is head over heels in love with his devotees. And sometimes when he thinks about his devotees, or when he's with his devotees, especially when he's separating from his devotees, he just becomes so overwhelmed that he just loses it. And he goes, Mudanga. Udagna means bewildered. So Krishna is Sarvagya. He knows everything. He is all-knowing, omniscient. And at the same time, he's mudagna. He's bewildered. Sometimes when he sees Radharani in the morning, Radharani will pass by with the gopis just to flirt with Krishna. And Krishna will be, you know, in the cow pens, and he will be getting ready to milk the cows. Because the cows, they won't give milk unless Krishna is there. So Krishna, when he saw Radharani go past by, he became so bewildered, so attracted and so bewildered, that he started to milk the bowl instead of the cow. So, but that doesn't mean that Krishna is, you know, foolish, or Krishna is, you know, not worthy of taking shelter of, because he doesn't know what to do, because he can't act properly. This is a materialistic way of judging and analyzing God. If he's not perfect in every single way, then we can't. How can we worship this person? And we have a tendency also within ourselves to judge authorities like that, to judge one another like that, in that mechanical way. If he doesn't look like this, if he doesn't sound like this, if he doesn't, you know, this is all bodily, material concept, that I can't give my respect, I can't give my love, I can't, you know, serve this person. So Garuda is, you know, very carefully putting Krishna and Balaram on his back without disturbing them, so that, you know, that trance that they're in won't be broken, and they can take them to Vrindavan, and they can gradually wake up from the trance in a comfortable state. This is very high devotional service. Why? Because it's all it is doing is trying to please, trying to make comfortable, trying to put at ease Krishna. There's nothing personal, no personal motivation, no consideration. Guru isn't thinking, oh well, you know, if they wake up, then they'll see that I'm doing this, and, you know, and we can talk, and then I'll be close to Krishna. He doesn't think like that. He thinks, yes, let me put carefully Krishna with me. Let me follow Brahma's order. But selfless. Pure devotional service is selfless. It's not, there's no consideration in pure devotional service of one's personal benefit. Text 11. Sustanam bhajide sarve chatur vaktrena bhoditaha samgyam ibhapto ramastu niyamano garudama garudmata. Advised by Brahma, everyone else went back home. Meanwhile, as Krishna and Balaram were being carried by Garuda, Balaram more or less regained consciousness. Text 12. Srinanda nandanas tatra paryakke sthapita shanai sakshat ibabatishtante yatratad kumagopikaha. Upon arriving at Navabrindavan, Garuda and Balaram gently placed Krishna on a bed. The gopas and gopis of Navabrindavan stood around him as if they were Krishna's real cowherd men and women. So they made the bed, you know, Krishna's bed is there, Nanda and Yashoda are there. It's all like a stage. It's all like a set, movie set. Text 13 and 14. Udabhena sahagatya Devaki putta vatsala Rukmini satya bhamanya Devya padmavati chasa Tadrik dashagatam krishnam Asaktastat chaktam anjasa Durad drishtipate tishtan Niliya brahmaya yachchana yachchaya. Uddhava came there with Devaki, who dearly beloved her son, And also with Rukmini, Satyabhama, other queens, and Padmavati. They simply couldn't leave Krishna in such a state. So at Brahma's request, they hid themselves and took up position some distance away from where they could still see Krishna. Commentary. Some of the devotees hid themselves within the trees, and others resorted to various other kinds of camouflage. So, even though Brahma's giving the order, and even though, as we said before, you know, the devotees are selflessly following the orders of their superiors in order to please Krishna, sometimes their emotions become so overwhelmed that they can't follow the order. You see? So it's not that just mechanically following the order either is going to get you pure devotional service. Pure devotional service is so exalted that sometimes when your emotion becomes so intense for Krishna, you can transgress the order. But this should only be applied properly. It should not be misused or abused. Because otherwise we will end up just doing what we feel like and what we think, you know, and we will fall down from devotional service. Very important point. Very important point. But here, these are actually very confidential family members of Krishna, you know, and they are trusted, you know. So Brahma said, all right, so you can't stand it. You can't not be there and see Krishna when all this drama is going to go on. So you cook it, but you have to go there, hide yourself. You can't come out and ruin it. You can't come out and ruin everything. Text 15 and 16. Naradastu pitagaskam ivatmanam amanyata devanam yadavanam cha sange ganna satu hava biyat yantahito bhutva vadyaikam yugapatakam nivishto bhagavat chishta madhuyanu bhavayasa. Narada, however, thinking he had committed an offense, did not accompany the demigods and the Yadavas. Instead, with great curiosity, he hid himself in the midst of the sky, fixing himself in a yoga sitting posture to observe the sweetness of the Lord's acts. Commentary. It was Narada who had made Krishna so unsettled by mentioning the present state of the Brajvasis. Narada therefore thought himself an offender. In fact, however, he had not acted offensively, as Parikshit Maharaj here indicates with the word ima, as if. Later in this chapter we shall hear Krishna explain why Narada should not blame himself. So this is a very important concept, very important point. Even the devotees who are very advanced and interacting with Krishna in intimate ways, up to a certain point, they will feel themselves offenders. They will never come to the point of thinking themselves beyond making offenses. Of course, in Braj, in Vrindavan, there is a state of consciousness in which the devotees even give up that caution at times with Krishna in order to please Krishna. They will chastise him as a superior. Mother Yashoda will chastise Krishna, chase him around, bring a stick out, threaten him, tie him up, so he'll behave properly. And Krishna, he loves these things. He loves to be treated like that by his devotees more than anything. But if we try to interact with Krishna in ways that are confidential like that, before we were actually purified and actually qualified, and before we actually know Krishna's heart, then we will act and do things in a way that will disturb Krishna rather than please Krishna. Therefore, it's very important not to just speculate about these things. After Lord Chaitanya left, there were different groups of devotees that began to speculate. You know, and they separated out the different members of the Panchatattva. And they would, you know, worship Advaitacharya if they were in his family or in his, you know, line. And they would ignore the others, or vice versa. And sometimes even, you know, because there's the Gauranga Nagaris, they, when they worship Lord Chaitanya, they dress up Lord Chaitanya like Gopi, because, you know, he's in Gopi Bhav, you know, he's in the mood of Radharani. So they dress him up as, and they put him in the middle of the rasa dance. It's called rasa bhav. It's a disturbance. It causes a disturbance to Krishna. And they're doing this because they've imagined a way of worshipping Krishna. This is the danger, the great danger in not remaining humble and not remaining underneath the spiritual master, the shelter and the guidance of the spiritual master, and taking, you know, our own natures and our own desires into account and going away from the standard ways of devotional service. So this point, important point here that's been made. You know, we're right in the middle of a situation where some very, very intimate devotional service is about to go on, right? Where Krishna is going to wake up and interact with these murtis as if they are the original persons, and we're seeing, you know, the other Dwarkavasis are, you know, they're watching Krishna from a distance and they're becoming so overwhelmed. They want to come out and interact with Krishna, and all these intimate, confidential things are going on. But right in the middle of that, there's this verse about Narada and how he feels bad because he was offended. Because he was the one, his words started this whole emotional outburst in the beginning. So he's in the clouds somewhere, you know. And how's he looking? He's in a yogic position. He's, you know, and watching from, as a yogi from a distance, you know. Feeling guilty, feeling bad because he's made an offense. So the message is that it's not that the devotees that come closer and closer to Krishna and take liberties that have freedom to interact with Krishna are not as humble as those who stand back and think that they're offenders. They are more humble. They are the most humble. They are the most humble. But they have come to that stage and they've become fixed in the humility so much so that they can interact with Krishna in ways that He wants them to interact with Him. And they no longer think about their themselves and whether it's a danger thing or not. So it's very important, this concept. We should not imitate the residents of Vrindavan. We should not bring... We want to follow in the footsteps of the liberated souls in Vrindavan. But we should not bring the interactions of a liberated person into the present level of devotional service that we're in if we're not liberated. Because what happens is, then we will say and do things that are displeasing. Such as the Gauranga Nagaris. They're putting Lord Chaitanya in the position of Krishna. They, you know, in Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nayanya. If you take that out of context, then what they're doing is perfectly alright. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nayanya is not different than Krishna. He's not different than Radha. So, you know. But Lord Chaitanya is playing a role. He's a sannyasi, you know. He's teaching us how to get there. So we have to follow in the footsteps of how he got there. Just like Krishna Arjun. If you want to understand the Bhagavad Gita, you have to, Prabhupada explained, that you have to understand the Bhagavad Gita the way Arjuna understood the Bhagavad Gita. You can't understand the Bhagavad Gita just in your own way. You can't go to the doctor, you know, and get a bottle of medicine. You take two pills per day for 10 days, and then you'll be cured. And then say, oh, well, hey, I want to be cured now, so I'll take the whole bottle right now, and therefore I'll be cured right now. No, then you'll die, or you'll get sicker. So if you don't keep yourself underneath your spiritual master, if you don't stay conscious of what is pleasing to your spiritual master and what is not, especially when the spiritual master passes away from this world physically, when his vapu goes away, if you don't pay very close attention to the body, if you don't pay very close attention and organize and do the things in the way and in the mood that he wants you, that pleases him, then you won't be able to go to Krishna. You'll cause disturbance. Yasya devi pura bhakti yata devi tata karo. Yasya prasada bhagava prasado. Yasya prasada nagati katopi. So this is a very important part here, where Narada is, we're seeing how Narada is acting. Narada is the, you know, he's the link, you know, to Lord Brahma, the disciplic succession. You know, from Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyas, from Vyas to Madhvacharya, this is how the disciplic succession, this is how knowledge of devotional service is coming down to us from Krishna. So without performing devotional service properly, and without pleasing our spiritual master, and without pleasing the Vaishnavas, we cannot be actually happy in devotional service. Our mind and senses, and our spiritual mind and senses in particular, cannot be satisfied. And that dissatisfaction will, you know, cause us to do things, say things that are counterproductive.